This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, and Dylan, it feels good to say that again.
I'm so happy to be back, Striga. I missed you, man. You know, all this time, it feels like. It hasn't been that long, but still.
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, but I'm so happy to be back. No, even still, you know, if that is your real name, but still, I'm very happy. Lots of stuff has been going on in the world of wrestling. Unfortunately, my favorite basketball team, the Memphis Grizzlies, just got eliminated from the playoffs in basketball, as well as my hockey team, the Predators. Like, in 1 week, both Nashville and Memphis, back-to-back losses in sports. I only have the Cubs left in the sports world, and I think football in the European region is on the off season now. Am I right? Is it the same in Germany, or is it just like that in England?
They still are playing the Champions League and European Cup, because they had to stop it in February because of borders closing. So they are right now. It actually is a format that I really like, because usually you have a first and second leg in the quarterfinals and so on, but this time they are playing it in like basically the World Cup mode. There's just one game on a neutral ground, and they advance if they win this one game, and it's been really exciting so far. And they are playing the final tournament, the final four teams next weekend, and yeah, I'm pretty much looking forward to that. That is still going on. Except for that, all other European championships, like the leagues, are in the summer break right now. Bundesliga is scheduled to return in September, I think. I don't know if the church bell is on the recording right now. I have to open the windows here, otherwise I'll just melt away, because it's been so hot lately in Germany. The reason that we haven't done a regular show in 3 weeks, you've been keeping up all our listeners on the Patreon, of course, on various topics there, so so good on you.
So many tournaments, and I just would like to put that over, because I am covering all of them.
Yes.
I've caught up on Tokyo Joshi Pro and DDT's tournaments, and I'm going to be starting the Stardom ones probably, you know, by the time you listen to this, the first episode of the Stardom tournament should be listed there. But I'll have time going forward, but eventually I'm going to get all of them, as well as the New Japan US Cup too. So you're getting coverage of all of them on the Patreon, $5 tier right there, Hashimoto tier. Represent him, represent us. Also, check out our merchandise as well that has just debuted. You get a special bonus offer if you do it before September 1st. If you order, you get 10% off. If you're a $5 subscriber, you get 10% off. That's 20% off, people. It's only at $20. No taxes, no shipping and handling. Don't worry. It's all handled. It's all good. You don't got to worry about it. We already sold a shirt.
Yes.
We got a message on Twitter about it. It was very nice. It was the Fighting Spirit Fist design as well, for representing both of us, and which you approved of. You told me privately, and obviously he liked as well. So shout out to Scott for ordering the shirt.
Shout out to Scott. Thank you for buying our merch. That's pretty cool to see that someone is
wearing our merch. That's that's like, I also on there, I actually have a redone version of my original wrestling shirt that I had, because I used to, I told this story, and I'll tell it one more time, but basically, back then, I had this one shirt that had a very similar design, although I updated the fox a little bit on the, to make it look a little cooler. But I had this one shirt, and every time I would have a big match, on the back, I would print out these like things, and it would be like the sticky thing, so I could stick it onto the back of the shirt. And it would always say one of my catchphrases, which is not really my catchphrase, but from a video game, Metal Gear Solid. It was a cornered fox is more dangerous than a... You know, I'd list whatever the nickname of my opponent was. It was originally... In the game, a very dramatic moment. I know Metal Gear Solid players know what I'm talking about when this happened, but there's a very dramatic moment where a character yells, a cornered fox is more dangerous than a jackal! And it was very defiant and awesome how it happened. But I always thought that was an amazing moment, so I made that into a thing on my shirt, and I thought it was a very cool thing for wrestling. But I did not put it on these shirts because of copyright worries based on that. I do not want Konami, of all people, who are known to not be exactly forgiving, says Hideo Kojima, for these sorts of things. But this shirt I still have still, though. It's an original version of my shirt that I had originally. Easter Lariat shirts. Even you have a shirt, Striga, I designed for you. It's a beautiful thing. Whatever you want, you can find it there. Good stuff going on the Eastern Lariat, especially on the Patreon. Hit that up. It's, even if you're not a subscriber and you want to order something, check it out. But it's a really good deal if you're a subscriber. I will put that out. $20 before September 1st. Very good stuff.
Absolutely. So, yeah, what I was going to say is that Dylan has been keeping up with all the content that we've put out. Shirts, Patreon,
tournaments,
and also the new Twitch channel that you debuted. yeah. There's been a lot going on. As for me, school started again this week, and for the last 2 weeks, I've basically been like in somewhat of an autopilot mode, and I only just realized that throughout in the middle of the last week that I've really not been doing so well lately. I've been so anxious about returning to school because we're basically back to a normal schedule in school, but everybody's supposed to wear masks, but we are in a room with 28 other people at top, and it doesn't really feel right at the moment, and it's all built on very fragile ground, and a couple of schools already have closed down again, like after like 2 days of school because of new corona cases. So I was not in a good mental state, and I couldn't really focus on basically anything, really. I couldn't really be focused on wrestling or on anything else. So I couldn't really keep up with anything. But as soon as school started again this past week, it was a good start. So I felt a little easier about everything, and I rewatched some stuff that I just watched in autopilot mode, so I'm happy that we can talk about wrestling right now, man. But we can't talk about wrestling right now without again mentioning the coronavirus situation, especially in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, I have the stat in front of me of the situation since January in Japan, and in April or in March, when they closed it all down, they basically didn't have a lot of cases. It went up steadily in April, and from late April to late June, the numbers were pretty much steady in Japan. Mm-hmm. The big peak started around July 15, so 2 weeks after they started to let people into wrestling arenas again, which is a crazy coincidence, if it is a coincidence even. I don't know. And I mean, I was watching the Aoki Memorial Show yesterday, and I've been, of course, watching DDT2 and all the other groups. Especially Kurken Hall is not a good look. If you look at what is going on across the hard cam, there is no distance whatsoever. And I'm just waiting for the day that they'll have to return to empty arenas. Because I just can't imagine that all these arenas have this great ventilation system that the air is like changed all the time. And what has me especially worried is the lineup for the G1 Climax that's supposed to come in September and October, with all the other tournaments being shorter and with less people in the Champion Carnival and the N1 Victory. That I was thinking that they'll cut down in manpower in the G1 too, but they have announced 19 shows. So I don't know about that schedule. At least they announced that they will not like mix the blocks. They will not have block A day, they will not have block B guys and undercards on the same day. But it is a, if you want to put it positively, it is a very ambitious schedule.
That is very nice, a very kind-hearted way of looking at it, I would say. I discussed this recently on my appearance on Post Pro Res with W.H. Park and John Pollock on Post Wrestling. You know, that I was so thankful.
Shout out to those two, because they also shouted us out on the show. Of course, you were on. They also made sure in their show comments in the footnotes, they made sure to shout us out again. So thanks for that.
Yes, and they even shouted our cage match as well on the show. I made sure to put over a company man right now, Strig. I know you had to be proud.
I mean, the USA Network did too, right? So
yeah, see, isn't it funny how when I show up, I'm just saying, I'm not saying it's all because of me. I'm just saying, some things are coincidences, some things are not. But yeah, so thank you for them for having me on. But I talked about this a little bit there, but man, 19 shows and for the G1 is just crazy. The idea of the virus really stepping up and having more cases ever since more people have come to these arenas, I think there's no way that was not going to happen. I kind of alluded to this when we talked about the New Japan shows previously, in effect that, if you remember, a lot of times in these wrestling shows, not just New Japan, but now all of them have similar rules. They say something to the effect of, well, you can't cheer. You have to come in a mask, but you can't cheer. But to me, it's like, if you're in these masks and you're right next to each other in all of these buildings, I feel like you're already putting everyone in danger.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like there's no way that this was not going to be the end result of this. I feel like it was inevitable. Maybe a little bit harder than some people might have thought, because I'm sure they didn't. But ultimately, and again, we kind of alluded to this when talking about the Jingu Stadium show last episode, Strig, is that ultimately, this is my belief, and I think it's been justified, that the main driver of all of this is money. So if they're going to find ways to get around all of this, they're going to do it, whether there's safety or whatever. Ultimately, this is about making money for the company. And right or wrong, you know, the companies, we saw Big Japan get into hot water earlier this year. It's really up to the government officials, I feel like, to protect people from themselves almost, because we've seen that, whether in Japan, especially in America, but wherever you are, really, a lot of places outside of New Zealand, perhaps. But really, so many places have been hit so hard by this, and they're just not able to get around it in their daily life, whether they want or need it. You know, they want to get out of these wrestling shows. They want things to be normal. That's completely human. I really don't put any blame on anybody for that. But just responsibly, I feel like the governments need to take a stand here and put a stop to all of this.
And of course, for the companies, it's the money, but the greater cause of this all has to be the Olympics, because if they go back to empty arenas, they will have to find a way to get the Olympics done next year. And I don't know about that. It's too fragile right now to say anything that is supposed to go down next year, but I feel like they want this normal state to ensure that these big Olympic Games can go on.
To me, that's even more vital then, that they shut things down now.
Exactly.
So they can get it. Like, if that's true, they need to do it now. So in 6 months' time, you know, I really think that should be something that supposedly the leaders of the public, these government elected officials, they should have had something in mind, where whatever country you are, but particularly Japan right now, there should be something where it's, hey, it's going to take 3 months. It's going to take 6 months. It's going to take however long until we get this totally flattened out, just like New Zealand did. They set the blueprint for you. Do it like they did. You know, at Japan, there's no reason they can't do it. They just have to get over, like, this, you know, money-hungry stuff and thinking about the Olympics. If they want to do that, then they have to stop thinking about the money stuff now, put it on hold for a few months. I say cut it down for the rest of the year, and, you know, at the start of next year, maybe we can get back to things, and maybe things can get back to normal. Maybe that enough time will have passed to where this wouldn't be as big of an issue. But if they keep going how things are going, it's not going to get better. We see it in America. You know, things opening up more and more. Schools are opening up here, too. And it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. So you have to really take a stand, I feel like. Again, it's really on the elected officials to do the right thing, not just for themselves, but for the entire future of the Olympics and what's going on in the next year or two before we can hopefully get a vaccine for this coronavirus.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at the promotions, Yuki Miyazaki, she was tested positive in Wave. Kotaro Yoshino in 2AW had a positive PCR test, which then led to everybody in 2AW canceling bookings, because 2AW, of course, they run their own shows, but they also have a lot of wrestlers wrestling for other companies, for DDT, for All Japan, for example. This past weekend, actually, a wrestler in Stardom and a wrestler in TJP, they tested positive. TJP and Stardom canceled their shows as a result of that. Last week, New Japan had a positive test. A positive PCR test, but not a positive corona test, that is. Mm-hmm. But it's the hits are coming closer, so as
even
said,
New Japan had to cancel a show.
Yes.
just a couple days ago.
Yeah. I don't know about all of it, but it's just worrying to see that they're trying to run their regular schedule now, but with everything going on, there is little normalcy.
Also, it's worth noting, even with the fans opening up, a lot of these companies are not announcing their attendances, which I think is not a very good sign, even monetarily, for all of this. I think people are starting to wise up to what's going on with this virus, and it's not a good sign for attendance numbers lately, because, you know, usually, you know, especially you know this, running cage match for a while, and I'm still new there, but you see the attendances all the time. And then suddenly you don't, you know, with these shows. It feels like that's not a good sign at all. If it was good numbers, they would announce them. But unfortunately, it's just, it's not a good look right now in any way, shape, or form in pro wrestling. It's kind of sad to see. It's scary to see people get sick from this. And all I can say is, anybody contracting this virus, I really hope for the best for it. And get well soon to all the people in wrestling and otherwise affected by the virus.
Absolutely. 100% agree to that. But, yeah, that's as much as we can say, I guess, about this topic.
Yeah.
The big topic this week, though, is the big tournaments going on right now and tournaments coming up in the future. First of all, Dylan, last weekend, the 5-Star Grand Prix started with two shows, and there was supposed to be another show this weekend, but as we just mentioned, that got cancelled. What is your takeaway from the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix so far?
Yeah, see, we're only a couple of nights in right now before the cancelled show, so not a lot going on in terms of, you know, like, or it's not that there's not a lot going on, we just haven't gotten that far to the tournament yet. Also, just being able to watch the shows, too, as Stardom's schedule is, they release stuff later on in the week. It's not live, which I think definitely is something they should probably think about changing.
Especially
in the near
with
future.
The new company behind them, they should really think about going live, especially if they want to continue growing the live aspect as something that you just can't underestimate.
Absolutely. We saw it earlier this year with the No People Gate show. They did go live, and it was very popular online. It got a lot of buzz. But there's been some really good matches for the first couple of shows. And you could look at the blocks. I think that you've got a lot of talented people. We went over it on the last episode in the preview. But some matches I really enjoyed from the first night, there was Himeka Arita versus Tom Nakano, which on paper sounds like a really great match. But it turned out it was a very good match. You know, I do think that there is something worth noting about this tournament, and that is that they've upped the time limit from 15 minutes to 20 minutes. And to me, I think it was pretty unnecessary. You know, because I thought 15 minutes is perfect to make them stand out above other companies. Or not even above, but just different than the 30-minute time limits of other companies in their tournaments and things like that. So,
The 15-minute limit, we've been talking about that in the last couple of years too. It always gave the matches a sense of urgency that you didn't have in G1 Climax matches, for example, because they always have the 30-minute time limit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it really benefited them. That Himeka match at Nakano went over 15 minutes, which is good, but it was only barely over. If they had done it in 14 minutes instead of 16 minutes, it would have been just as good, if they wanted to get around
and
that.
And I mean,
pool.
What is the benefit of Julia and Mayu Iwatani going 17 minutes instead of 15 minutes?
Like, you know, they're barely going over it. It just seems like something, just symmetrically, it's not a big issue for me in terms of match quality, like making the matches worse. It was still good at 17 minutes and 16 minutes, but it's more so the aesthetics of it that I think was kind of an unnecessary change. So, the Julia Mayu Iwatani match was really good as well. Three back-to-back big matches on the first show. Himeka and Tom Nakano, Utami Hayashishida and Jungle Kiona, and Mayu Iwatani and Julia were all very good. I personally enjoyed the Jungle and Utami match the best, but I know a lot of people like Julia and Mayu as well. But all three of those matches were well worth watching. You know, 7 out of 10 or above, 3.5 stars or above, recommended level. So that was a very good show. The second show was interesting in its own right. They had a couple of big matches on there as well. Mayu and Starlight Kid was a really good match. And, like, this was Starlight Kid's coming out party. This was her first ever Grand Prix appearance, so she has her big match against her stable leader and the one that she's modeled after in a lot of ways. And I thought that it was so good. Like, Mayu really put her over so well in that match. Very good match. That was my favorite match of the whole tournament through the first two nights. Nakano and Konami was another strong match. I've really appreciated both of their work, obviously. Momo Watanabe and Izumi, great match as well. That was a really strong performance. Shuri and Jungle was a good match, but not as strong as I would have thought. Like, that to me would have been a sleeper match of the tournament candidate, but they kind of let me down a little bit with that match.
Surely sounds like a match that's right down your alley, and actually right down mine as well, yeah.
Yeah, amazing match, like, on paper. Himeka and Julia, another one that I thought would be great, that was, I think the Himeka and Julia match was actually better than the Jungle match, but I was just really let down by it. Maybe it was my own fault for expectations rising too high, but it just wasn't as great as I wanted it to be, pretty much. But also, Jungle losing a lot in this tournament already.
Sure.
So that may be, I may be souring on that as well. But it was a good match. It is what it is. I really liked the Julia Mayu match, but the Starlight Kid and Mayu match was the best match of the tournament so far through the first two shows, in my opinion.
What's your takeaway from Julia saying that she won't lose any match in the tournament, and then she loses the next one right away?
Julia Goto is what we call her now in Stardom. But that finish was devastating too. Himeka's powerbomb that she hit on Julia. Amazing, maybe too amazing finish in some ways, because it did knock her loopy and she had to get taken off the shows. But they got canceled anyway, so it's okay, pretty much. But yeah, Julia losing right away after that pronouncement. She had already lost. Her character they portrayed her as, she lost this match versus Saki Kashima earlier on in the year, and they've just portrayed her as, like, delusionally claiming she's still undefeated, even though she lost the match. So I want to see her next promo say, "I'm undefeated, I will not lose any points in this tournament."
Maybe that running powerbomb got her banged up so bad that she doesn't remember losing to Himeka here.
Exactly. That's exactly what I want to see. But she never remembered losing to Saki either, even though it was on a roll-up instead of a big move. But even the roll-up can be devastating if applied correctly, as Saki taught us.
Death by roll-up. Sure.
Exactly.
Did they announce if they will, like, reschedule that show? Because, like, now the Momo Watanabe versus Utami Hayashishita match got cancelled, as well as Shuri versus Maika, Jungle Kiona versus Natsuko Tora, Death
Yamasa. They're going to make that up. They're going to make them up.
Okay.
They said. They said they would at a later date. If they actually get around to doing it is another question, but they announced that they will make them up on – like, they'll just have the matches on later shows.
I see. Okay. So they won't run another show, but they'll just put the matches on other shows.
That's what they announced, yes.
Okay, I get it.
Let's hope it happens. Like, you know, we're in, you know, crazy waters right now, but hopefully that does happen because those are some really good matchups.
Yeah, actually, there is a big break right now. The next show is only on August 29 in Niigata. So for that show, they have 5 matches scheduled. For the next one in Takaoka, they only have 3 matches on schedule, so maybe they can add a few more there.
Exactly. They have plenty of room on these shows to add in matches that they need to. But I just hope that they can get around to it ultimately. And with 2 weeks, hopefully everybody stays inside. Nobody even comes close to any problems or anything like that. And maybe things can have smooth sailing going forward, at least until the final.
Sure, absolutely. And so much for the 5-Star Grand Prix. As you said, only 2 shows down now. Not a lot to really get a deep dive into. A tournament that has been advanced a little more is the Tokyo Princess Cup 2020 that actually was going on in parallel with the King of DDT tournament in the same arena in Tokyo in the Kanda Myojin Hall, where DDT has been running steadily. And I actually think that this is a good idea in these times right now to just run this one arena, this one venue, because you'll attract a lot of the same customers, I assume, with TJP and DDT. And without touring, the risk of spreading anything is significantly lower. So good decision on DDT's hand, I think.
Absolutely.
And yeah, this tournament, the Tokyo Princess Cup, started on August 8th, and basically the first few matches that we had in the cup were really short matches, so nothing really to talk about here. With Suzumu beat Haruna Neko, Maki Ito beat Himawari Unagi, Natsumi Maki beat Mina Shirakawa. That's a match that I wanted to talk about a bit. Because Dylan, Natsumi Maki, she has this finishing move that's called the backlash.
Yes.
And it basically is like a running sunset flip.
Yes.
And I think, I don't know about you, but this is such a weak looking finishing move.
Yes.
It doesn't have any impact at all.
I mean, a lot of the finishers in Tokyo Joshi Pro are like that.
Yeah, but at least, like, for example, with Shoko Nakajima, she does a Northern Lights suplex hold, at least.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, she's very good, you know. And Maki, she's improved a lot over the last couple of years. She started out in Actress Girls and had a run in Stardom as well, working with when they worked together. She's a good worker, but, yeah, the backlash is not a great finisher. But, you know, there's moves here that are like, you know, falling asleep headbutt. And, you know, Tokyo Joshi Pro as a big finisher. And a freaking boob smothering as a finishing move for some people. And so the backlash is not that bad by comparison.
True though. But I just think that she should adjust to some other move. Because even the setup, I don't know. The setup requires so much suspension of disbelief that someone would just stand there and wait until Natsumi Maki runs at you and just hits you with a backlash.
Yes, absolutely. Especially for a move called the backlash. That's a cool name. You have to have a cool move to you know, like I named all my moves after cool stuff. You can't have weak moves named the backlash. You have to have it be cool. You know, it should be like a, you know, like a lightning spiral or something. Like that would fit the backlash name, in my opinion. Not the not the sunset flip move.
Yeah, exactly. Biggest match of Raku's career so far. She was against Mio Yamashita in an 8-minute match that I really liked. Mio Yamashita guiding Raku to her first big moment in Tokiyoshi Pro. But the best match of the entire show surely was Yuka Sakazaki against Nogata Tenma.
Yes.
We've talked a lot about Tenma when we talked about Tokiyoshi Pro. We both really like her, and I think that she had a great match with Yuka Sakazaki here. really coming close to defeating Yuka Sakazaki.
Even on the second night, the triple threat match, I thought she had a really good performance. Like, Tenma, so underrated among Tokyo Joshi Pro fans, and I don't really know why. You know, she's such a, like, she has a unique style. I think she has a great look. You know, she looks like a star. She wrestles with charisma, with force. You know, she doesn't have weak moves like some people we talked about. But she's a really good worker, and I totally agree with you. To me, that first show, there was nothing on it that I liked outside of the main event. Like, everything was okay at best, and then you had the main event, which was a good match. And I was like, okay, this is very cool, and I love seeing these two. Sakazaki, really good worker as well. You know, she has her run in AEW, so she has a little bit more popularity with the extra exposure. Obviously, the champ in the main event. And Tenma, I think, really deserves a lot of credit for her role in the match as well. I talked about it on the Patreon show. Always one of my favorites in the company, definitely somebody I wish would get more of a push, but unfortunately she kind of got eliminated in the first night. But even in the non-tournament matches, like I said, she still adds quality to any card she's on. So Tenma is somebody I really enjoy and would definitely recommend the main event of night one.
Yeah, night two, Dylan, what did you like about night two? We had Mitsuki defeating Suzume, Maki Ito defeating Yuki Kamifuki, Miyu Watanabe defeated Mira Mayumi, and Yuki Aino defeated Rika Tatsumi in the main event. These were all second-round matches.
Yes, the first two matches on the show, the six-woman tag with Miyu Yamashita and Hikari Noah leading their teams, and Natsumi Maki as well. That was a very good opener. I was really impressed by it. The triple threat I mentioned with Shoko Nakajima and Haruna Neko. I've always said this, too. Like, Haruna Neko, like, her and Suzume did not have a very good match in the opener at the first night, but then they put them with different wrestlers on the second night, and I thought they both performed much better. Suzume versus Mizuki and Neko in the triple threat match. But to me, the main matches were the two final matches, and Miyu Watanabe versus Mirai Mayumi, both of the last two matches kind of came out of nowhere for me, but especially the semi-main event. I really wasn't looking forward to that at all with Mayumi, very young wrestler, but I really liked what they did in that match. You know, Mayumi would tell this story going right to the arm, and I mentioned this on the Patreon. Compare Watanabe's selling of her back compared to Kamifuku versus Ito, where they tried to do the stuff with the arm selling to Kamifuku's back. Like, so much better, I feel like. Watanabe did it here and really helped make the match. And Mayumi came out of nowhere with her style. And I also love the build to Watanabe's move. Now, do you like this better than the Backlash? Her move, the laser beam punch.
A bit.
It was very well done, I thought. Yeah. The laser beam punch, I'm giving the thumbs up to the laser beam punch for Miyu Watanabe. And I'm a fan now. Like, Mayumi and Watanabe won me over. Really good match, I thought.
Mirai Mayumi, she had very good fundamentals when she started out. And she showed it here, as you mentioned. The only thing that I didn't really like about the match was that the finish came pretty much out of nowhere. That Watanabe hit the teardrop and that was just it. They could have gone, like 1 or 2 minutes longer to create a bit more tension in the match for the audience too, but it was still a good match. But as you mentioned, Yuki Aino 2 against Rika Tatsumi. This was a very good main event, and Yuki Aino, she's been really getting more focus in recent months.
Absolutely, and I was impressed by both of them here, especially Tatsumi. If you don't know her, her gimmick is basically like the Taguchi of Tokyo Joshi Pro, all ass-based offense, pretty much. But much like the actual Taguchi, she's also a very good technical wrestler as well, as we saw here in this match, where she really toned that down. And her nickname, if you don't know about her, is the White Dragon. She's a huge fan of Fujinami, so she used a lot of Fujinami spots in this match as well, and all of her offense. So I really love that. Give me more of that, not the butt bumps and all of that stuff. I really like that. Aino, like you said, getting more of a spotlight, and she actually picked up the win here, so that was really good. Also, I loved how she used more of her power moveset, like the big gut-wrench suplexes from the top rope that she hit, or the middle rope. I thought it was a really great spot, and she ended up getting the win. You know, really good stuff there. I thought that was those two matches were you know, better, clearly better than anything on day one except for the main event of that show, but definitely on par and maybe even better, especially this Ano and Tatsumi match. I think it's right up there as a match of the tournament already. And Ano, how do you, since we're grading the finishing moves now in Tokyo Joshi Pro, what do you think of her new move, the UBV?
What again was it?
She had the double arm lock and then dropped her down.
It was kind of a double arm suplex, but not really.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, exactly. It was a modified version of it.
Yeah. It just was the. I mean, it basically was a double hip toss.
Yeah, that's one way to call it. But I definitely better than the backlash. Is that the bottom of the scale?
The bottom of the scale is the backlash.
Yeah. Laser beam punch at the top for me.
Sure.
Well, actually, Sakazuki's 450 splash is probably at the top. But that laser beam punch is a worthy number two.
It is. Surely. So that was the second day of the Tokyo Princess Cup. The third day had another round of second round matches. Natsumi Maki defeated Pom Harajuku. Shoko Nakajima defeated Mahiro Kiryu. And then the two main event matches on that show. Mio Yamashita defeated Hikari Noah. They were paired in the undercard six-man tag on the second day that you just mentioned. And of course, the crowd reacted very big for Hyper Misao defeating Yuka Sakazaki in the main event, 15 minutes, 42 seconds. Thought this was a very good match.
Yeah, the main event was the best match on the show to me. Along with the semifinal, I really enjoyed Noah and Yamashita's their run. I thought they did a very good job in the match. And I just want to shout out Noah, who is somebody that always had a lot of potential.
Also very underrated, actually. She mostly appears in undercard matches.
Yeah, you know, she's underrated in terms of being under pushed, but when the Up Up Girls came across, she was the one that stood out, I think, to most people. And I think for a good reason. Even though, you know, now you've got Raku and stuff like that, so they kind of push them all in a certain way. But you're right, Noah doesn't really get the love in the booking that maybe she deserves here. But got a good match against Yamashita. And Miyu is it's very important, this tournament, for her, because her history in Tokyo Joshi Pro is that she is like the reverse Goto in New Japan, but not anymore. Like, Goto, historically, he would lose a lot, but in the tournaments, he was like the king of the tournaments in the past. Like, they don't really push him like that anymore, but for a long time in his career, he was like that. Yamashita loses all the times in tournaments. Like, she's terrible in tournament formats, always goes out in the first round. So now they're giving her her big run, finally, in the Princess Cup. And I thought that adds a lot to her matches, that the upset alert for her is always real. Even though on paper, Noah is much less ranked than her, you always have that in the back of your head, that Yamashita could lose. So that's why I like that match so much, that they really played off that a lot.
And the good thing about Yamashita, too, is that ever since she lost the Tokyo Princess Championship, when did she lose it, actually? In early 2019. Basically, they've been avoiding to put her in big title match position since then. She has been in other programs, but now with her being advanced in the tournament so far now, they could go back to that again. And I really like that approach.
Absolutely. It's worth mentioning, too, for all these women. That was my favorite match on the show. I said the main event was the best match, but actually I thought that was the best match for Miyu and Noah. But we'll talk about the main event in a second. But it's worth noting for all the Tokyo Joshi Pro girls that this company has basically been on ice for like 3 or 4 months heading into this tournament. They had their just comeback last month, or the month before that in June. But before that, they really hadn't run any shows for most of the year. So and still, everybody's still in good form in Tokyo Joshi Pro, and that's a very good sign for them, because a lot of these wrestlers are very young, and to have them go so hard and do so well after all of the things going on that they've had to deal with, I think is a really good sign for someone like a Noah and things like that. So I was very impressed with that match. But what did you think about the main event, which I thought was also a very good match as well, which saw a big upset with Hyper Misao getting the win over the champ?
Yeah, as I just said, the crowd reacted very big for that. And you know, I was a big, big fan of Misao when she turned heel and when she had this tag team with Saki Akai. And I didn't really like that they just abandoned this new character, because I thought that this new heel character really could have gotten her to main event levels. But apparently the crowd really loves the Hyper Misao character, and she apparently also feels more at home, so to speak, with doing the superhero character. And so she went into this match as the heavy underdog against Yuka Sakazaki, and Sakazaki was very close to scoring the winning pinfall in the end, but got cut short. And I really, really like the finishing sequence where they basically traded cradles, and in the end, Hyper Misao rolled her up with the La Maestra cradle. So from all aspects of their characters, both the comedy aspect as well as the high-flying from Sakazaki down to the groundwork, I thought this was a very good match.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on everything you said, literally. I much preferred Misao as the heel character. And even that, she was so good that she made Saki Akai interesting to me, and yeah. turned my opinion around on her. Really helped, or helped lead the charge. Saki turned my opinion on her around this year. But back then, even when I wasn't a fan of her in-ring work, I thought them as a tag team really served a great purpose in Tokyo Joshi Pro, and she was the leading force behind it, in my opinion. The return to the hero character, it reminds me of something that happened in Stardom last year, where in the 5-star Grand Prix, they did the storyline with Sumire Natsu. Sumire Natsu. No. They did the storyline with her where she was trying to wrestle a more serious style, you know what I'm saying? Because she's usually a comedic character. She had won her first title that she ever did with the Artist of Stardom titles right before the tournament. And then in the tournament, they had her wrestle more of a serious style. She even got a win over some big people in the tournament. And then right after the tournament, they told this whole story of her wanting to finally be a serious wrestler. And it's like they just went right back to the comedy style, which she is admittedly great at. Like, sure. There's no question about that. And Hyper Misao is a great gimmick, and the fans love it. But to me, I really was disappointed that they got away from all of the storyline work that they did with Sumire and Stardom, and now Misao in Tokyo Joshi Pro. It feels like they just went back to what works, and that's cool and all, and it's not like it's some crazy move. I understand why they did it, but to me, the heel work was a lot better, and Sakazaki is one of the best workers in Tokyo Joshi Pro, in my opinion. She would be in my top 3 or 4 for sure, and I think she totally deserved champion, and a big upset for Misao. She deserves that win based on her work in the heel stuff, but this character, I think, does have a ceiling, so it'll be interesting how they get around all of this in the future. But big win for Misao, and like you said, the finishing stretch was really, really good. And I will throw a segment from the Twitch stream of Eastern Lariat Wrestling on, because this was something I brought up on that show. Twitch.tv/Shadows Over Heaven, by the way, if you want to see our shows. Do you prefer the Maestra Cradle being called A, the Maestra Cradle, or B, La Casita, in tribute to Negro Casas? Which is better?
I love La Casita.
Me too. That's what I called it originally, but I realized that more people would probably know it by the Maestra Cradle. But
I tend to only call it La Casita when luchadores do it.
I think that's fair. I think that's a very fair way to do it. Like, you know, because some moves, like the vertical suplex in Japan is called the brainbuster, and not a suplex. So I think that's fair. And like kind of like the back suplex is called the backdrop in Japan.
Yes.
So I think that I think that works. I think that totally works. So Maestra Cradle for the win for Misao.
Yeah. So we had the quarterfinals on August 15. On Saturday, I've not watched the show yet. Misuki defeated Yuki Aino. Maki Ito defeated Mio Watanabe. Shoko Nakajima defeated Natsumi Maki. And Mio Yamashita ended Hyper Misao's tournament. So no upset alert with Mio Yamashita. She advanced to the semifinals.
Yeah, first time ever. I haven't seen the show either, actually. I've been trying to catch up on everything. So I apologize for that. I wish we could give a better rundown of this, but I promise I will on the Patreon in the coming days, and I'm sure however this plays out, we'll get back to it in terms of the finals and things like that, how that comes. The matches look good. The booking really makes a lot of sense when it comes to Shoko, Ito, Mizuki, and Yamashita making the finals. To me, Miyu finally getting these many wins, I just don't see why she shouldn't win, because her entire career has been losing immediately in tournaments, and now she finally wins a lot. I think it would be smart for her to win the tournament. And she, like you said, they've really kept her out of the top seed,
yep.
even though she's kind of the unofficial ace. So I think it has to be considered the favorite right now. Mizuki, I don't think will win because she's the defending champion. She won last year's Princess Cup. Ito, I hope, does not win. But like she has her run of popularity. I will give her that. But to me, I'm just not really a big fan of her wrestling. And Shoko would be good as well. You know, but I think Miyu has to be considered the favorite. I think Ito is a sleeper, though, to win. I think it's very possible they pulled the trigger on her.
They could, but I would just think that this is the time now to.
It should be Miyu.
It should be it should be Miyu Yamashita to give her a run on top again after what we said, that she wasn't on top for a long time now. Regarding the tournament schedule, it's. Kind of difficult because it's actually not difficult. They canceled the show on the 16th and on the 22nd, but they still have the show on August 29 on schedule. And on August 29, the final is scheduled to happen, but they still have to do the semifinals that were supposed to go down on August 16. So they'll probably just do the semifinals on the undercard of the Shinjuku Face show on August 29 and then the finals on the same day. So no worries there. They don't have a league to run like Stardom, for example. So it's much easier to bounce back from there. And as I said, like right around the same day that Tokyo Yoshi Pro started their tournament, DDT also started theirs. The King of DDT 2020 went on with 14 matches in the first round. Do we have to run down all of them, Dylan? I don't know.
Every single match.
All right.
We don't have to.
Fasten the seatbelt now. No.
Yeah.
It was a lot of wrestling on one show. Most of the matches were really short. I give a shout out to some of the matches I liked. I think Yukio Naya has been improving vastly over the last couple of months, and he had a very fun match with El Lindemann in the opening match, of course. Going to the story of the big man fighting the smaller man, Lindemann almost pulled the upset, but Yukio Naya was just too much of a man for Lindemann.
Lindemann won.
Yeah. Didn't Yukio Naya win the match?
Lindemann won.
Then it's wrong on Kurolav, actually.
Yeah. Lindemann won this match. I was like, what are you talking about? Remember, because he faced Takeshita in the second round.
Oh, that's right. Then yes, that's true. But why does it say Yuki Naya defeated El Lindemann on Prolav? Then I did not do that. I did not do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to Prolav. As I said earlier, this was one of the shows that I watched a couple of days ago when I was just thinking autopilot mode. I went back and watched some of the matches, and I actually went back and watched Takeshita against Lindemann twice. now that I think about it. But you're absolutely correct, of course.
Yeah, well you know, like
but
I said...
But the match itself stands as it is. It was a very good match, I thought.
It was. Like, to me, Naya's so... Like, I'm not a fan of his usually. He's very kind of boring. But Lindemann, the king of wrestling in this tournament. I absolutely love Lindemann and everything he did. Well, we could talk about the Takeshita match as well. Mm-hmm. Everything he did in this tournament was awesome. And I really thought he cracked the code on how to work Naya and make his stuff work. And how impressive is Lindemann doing these power spots on these bigger guys? You know, so I really enjoyed that, you know. And they built up to, like, this very, like, Yano-esque type of finish for Lindemann to finally roll him up and get the pin in a believable fashion. Because you look at the size difference and it's crazy. But they totally made it work. Lindemann is awesome, and that was by far... And Naya's faced some really good opponents in the past, mm-hmm. but to me, by far, his best match of his career.
It was very good, actually, yes. Katsusada Iguchi established his short-range lariat as a finishing move. He also went to use the Buchikamashi, the running shoulder tackle, as a finishing move. And I'm really impressed with Iguchi in this tournament. I think he should win, too.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I kind of mentioned this on the Patreon. They've also got over his headbutt as a devastating move, which played a great... I love the way they portrayed that into a story in with Takeshita by the end. How they used the headbutt in the first couple of matches, and then Takeshita was ready for it in the next match. But Higuchi has been very good as well. You know, I think he's probably been... I think he makes the most sense, and they've done a good job putting him over overall in the tournament. Overall, let's just go through it here. Do you have a favorite match of night one, or do you want us to go through guys?
Yeah, my favorite match of night one probably was the main event with Akito against Tetsuya Endo. But I really liked some of the shorter matches too. Yeah. With Shun Nakatsumata against Yukio Sakaguchi, for example, I thought this was a very well-done short match. And yeah. I also liked the idea of Yuki Ino being desperate and just running at Shinya Aoki and failing right away. I thought it was a very good attempt. Also, another good attempt of Katsuki Hirata in a more serious role against T-Hawk in this tournament. I kind of like that.
That was my favorite match the first night, was T-Hawk and Hirata.
Mm-hmm.
T-Hawk is my MVP of tournament so far, just in terms of work rate. Everything this guy touches turns to gold.
It's crazy,
right now.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm a huge fan of both of the Strong Hearts right now, especially DDT. Like, to me, they really shine over pretty much everyone in DDT, in my opinion, just in terms of an in-ring perspective. And Hirata, I've been on this guy for years. I've always thought he has more than meets the eye, like more than people give him credit for. And I thought he did a very good job here. But T-Hawk, what makes me love him so much is... So he was going to start to do this Tokyo Go stuff with Hirata, and T-Hawk is not having it. He fights his way through it. He's not selling. Like, he's doing his own style. He doesn't give a crap about DDT. We saw that multiple times where comedy stuff would come up, and T-Hawk just does his thing. And I absolutely love, like, his style in the tournament and just his perspective on it. So I really enjoyed that. And there was a great where T-Hawk tried to do his double chop, and Hirata ended up busted out a surprise enziguri. I thought it was a great spot, and then it led to a great near fall with a small package that everybody bought into, and T-Hawk was awesome. T-Hawk is like the guy to me. He shouldn't win because Higuchi should win, I think, in the tournament, but T-Hawk to me is like, I love this guy so much.
I mean, it's no secret that we love him on the show. We've been very high on him when Big Japan did the Ikitosen Strong Climb. Remember, I booked him to win the tournament, actually, back in April, which didn't really happen.
That would have been cool, though, if it did.
Cool, yeah, absolutely. Yes, so I really also liked Akito in this tournament. They've established this new submission move that he did, the Goliath Bird Eater, which is an absolutely incredible name, by the way, and it yes. looks very good too. He defeated Tetsuya Endo with that move, again to a big crowd reaction. Akito defeating the reigning champion, so that got him a lot of traction there.
Yeah, I wish Endo would learn how to sell for once, which he never does in his matches. He does it for the first half of the match, but then suddenly it goes out the window. 100% accuracy with Endo. I'm kind of over him, to be honest, in his matches. Like, even the one with Tanaka, and that was something I really looked forward to. Any Tanaka, Masato or Minoru, with who he's wrestled both of them. Endo, it's like, ultimately, I know DDT fans don't care about that. Like, it doesn't matter that he doesn't sell it. Like, it really doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
But for me, like, I still watch these matches, and we see it with other people. Like in the Tokyo Joshi Pro Show, I made the comparison. Like, we see other people do it better, so why can't he?
Do you expect an answer from me? I don't know.
Well, I know you're a big fan of his, and that's cool. Like, he does a lot of great stuff.
Yes.
Like, in terms of moveset, like, there's a lot of good about him. That's another part that's very frustrating about him, is that we know he can, based on what he does in the first half of the match, which he's excellent at. But then it all comes across, it all comes apart when he has to do his flippy stuff, which, you know, is cool, but I'm just not really a fan of how he gets to all of that. I wish that he would find a way to balance it a little bit better between the first half and the second half, because it's like, in terms of selling it, you're like a 10 on accuracy, and then you go to a 1.
Yeah,
and
that like, definitely is a flaw of his. And
Akito was awesome in that match, though.
Yes,
I agree with you. Like, Akito is a great wrestler. I've always loved his style that he brings to the table, and I think that's something you have to say about DDT as a whole. If you look at any of these shows, there's going to be some amazing variety on them. You know, there's going to be a technical match. There's going to be a big man versus little man match. There's going to be an Aoki doing some shoot style stuff at times, or some crazy comedy. There's going to be anal molestation, which was some horrible stuff with Dino, which was very saddening after the first night, because they kind of went away from that with him and Honda for the 3-minute match. So I was like, oh, okay, this was... They caught me off guard a little bit, and then the next night with Ueno, I was like, no, Ueno is my guy, don't put him through this. But unfortunately, it happened that way.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a lot of, regardless though, a lot of people think that's funny, so that's cool. You have Chris Brooks doing his comedy in the undercards a lot of times too. Big guys, young guys like the Akiyama Army, Jun Retsu, is showing great improvement, by the way. We'll have to say, Okatani really getting better day
by
day.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, see, so you, regardless of whatever you like, there's going to be some stuff that somebody likes, there's going to be some stuff that some people don't like, but there's great variety up and down these cards, and I think that's something you have to give DDT credit for.
What I really liked was the second night of the King of DDT. First, Tetsuya Endo won a Battle Royal to re-enter the tournament, along the lines of what Dragon Gate did earlier with their tournament that they did. Tetsuya Endo then... actually went on to make it to the semifinals through this chance to get back in. But I think the big story of this second round DDT King of DDT show was the three main event matches. Minoru Tanaka defeating Shunma Katsumata, Konosuke Takeshita defeating El Linderman, and Katsu Sada Higuchi defeating Harashima. I watched all of these matches twice, actually. And it's really hard for me to make out a clear favorite of mine.
Yeah.
But I would probably go with Higuchi over Harashima just because I like Higuchi so much. Minoru Tanaka against Shuma Katsumata was very good too. Tanaka kind of guiding Katsumata to this very technical match. Takeshita and Linderman had a more suplex-based match. And Higuchi just... He ran into Harashima and just... won in the match, just like this bulldozer running over the ace.
Yeah, to me, the last two matches were the best of the tournament so far, from night two, Takeshita and Linderman and Higuchi and Harashima. I like the Katsumata and Tanaka match as well. Ashuma is somebody that's really been improving a lot and improving his standing among people. He's got a lot of popularity right now, I feel like, especially in the Western world. And now you do something completely different with him versus Minoru Tanaka. I thought it was a really good match that he had there. Great stuff with Shunma. If you notice, he even did Ikuta Hidaka's leg powerbomb, like pickup powerbomb that he did. Yeah. So battle arts representation on DDT right now from Shunma, of all people. So I thought that was a really good match. Tanaka, I was kind of disappointed with him and Soma. Soma is another guy that's like 6 out of 10 wrestler to me. Like, totally fine, but not special. And I don't think he had a great match with Tanaka the first night.
They gave him a lot of chances, though. They really want, want him to be this big guy, but I don't think he has it.
He's fine, like, but you're like the guy. No, like he's not that guy. Not a big fan of him, to be honest. He's like I said, he's fine, but I really enjoyed too. I have to mention T-Hawk again. This time against Makoto Oishi, I thought had a very good match as well. Some great stuff with like. You know, they did some really cool stuff, and Oishi actually stepped up a little bit, even compared to Hirata. I thought that was a really good match that is worth checking out. All four of those matches were recommended to me, by the way, on the Patreon. So you get to the big two matches. The big two were the biggest and best ones to me. I think Higuchi winning, it's very logical to like that better because him winning holds more meaning, I feel like, than Takeshita winning over Linderman. But I love the Linderman and Takeshita match so much. Just Linderman now, he does kind of a very similar match to what Naya did, except Takeshita adds so much more than what Naya did. So this was a really great match. And even him, it really also puts over Takeshita's size as well to have Linderman going against him. And, you know, Takeshita clearly bigger than Linderman, but Linderman still fights on, has amazing heart with all the things that he does. Takeshita had some great moves and just some great technique. And I loved how he worked. This is very important for an ace. He knows how to work as the ace versus a low-ranked guy. and it totally worked out here. I really thought that was a great match. That was my favorite one, but the Higuchi and Hiroshima was right next to it. Totally both of them recommended. A great win for Higuchi. Again, showing a lot of the hard-hitting stuff, and Hiroshima did a great job. He's another guy that I really enjoy a lot. He's not the ace anymore like he used to be, but Hiroshima always brings out good performances in big matches. I loved how he went after the ribs, and again, Higuchi selling the ribs much better than someone like Endo in his matches. I thought he really made that match work, and when he started to unload and do the big strikes, it felt very earned. I really liked both of the last two matches on round two.
Yeah. Absolutely, I did too. So this brought us to the quarterfinals. We had four matches that all actually were very different from one another. Yeah. First, T-Hawk defeated Yuki Ueno. The Strong Hearts versus Nautilus story just continues on all the time here. Maybe the weakest match of the quarterfinals. I don't know. Yuki Ueno, he has been really great up until this KOD title shot that he had against Tetsuya Endo. That was great too, but then it kind of seemed that they backed away from pushing him a bit, and to me it feels like that kind of lost a little bit of self-confidence throughout that. He has not been very good in this tournament, in my opinion.
That's not fair, because he had to, like, look at his opponents in the first two nights. Match with Dino was absolutely atrocious, but it wasn't his fault, though.
True.
Yeah. So, but I agree with you. I honestly think, to be honest with you, just to piggyback off your point, that match wasn't as great as you might think it would be, at least for me. But I don't think any of these matches delivered on the third show to what I would want them to be. I mean, outside of Aoki versus Akito, which was a technical match, but it was never going to be a traditionally great match. It was going to be great for what it was, you know. And I didn't think the main event with Takeshita Higuchi was as good as Higuchi and Hiroshima, personally.
No. I agree with that.
I thought all these matches were like 6 or 7 out of 10. Like, to me, T-Hawk and Ueno, that might have been the you could say that was the best one, like, to me. But you could say it's the worst one, too. So, like,
I don't know.
You know.
I wasn't really too fond of this match. I might actually go and say Shinya Hoki versus Akito was the best one. Was kept short. They did just their usual groundwork, their very good technical approach. And what I really liked about that is that finally they have someone in Akito that is able to top what Shinya Hoki is doing. Mm-hmm. And with the Goliath Bird, he did that and rolled him up then. I really like that. But as you mentioned, Endo and Tanaka, fine. Higuchi, Takeshita, they probably wanted this to be much more than it actually was. And Higuchi and Takeshita, they both tried. They both tried to live up to, maybe it was supposed to be the best tournament match with two guys that clearly are in the big focus in the next coming years. But the approach of it was, maybe they tried too hard.
I've seen mixed reviews of the finish of this match. I personally liked it.
Me too.
Basically, where Higuchi basically just tackled Takeshita as hard as he could.
He just ran him over a lot, much like Hiroshima did. And, I mean, Higuchi is a big former sumo guy. It's totally believable that he would win the match with that.
Absolutely. I get where they're saying, like, came out of nowhere or whatever, but I think it actually made it even better. Like, I really liked the finish.
I mean, where is a explosive running shoulder block supposed to come from? Except for out of nowhere.
Exactly. Like, so, to me, I think that was probably my favorite of the third round.
Usually I'm not too crazy about finishes that come out of nowhere, but if you have a move like that, that should come out of nowhere.
Absolutely. I thought it was an awesome finish, and for the story of the match. Higuchi has never gotten to push this hard over back-to-back wins over aces. So, like, this really made sense for him to win this way. It kept Takeshita strong. I liked it. I thought, like I said, I didn't hate any of these matches, any of these four. I just think that they didn't live up to expectations.
The second round matches were better.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Ueno T-Hawk I thought was a good match. I liked it better than you. Akito and Aoki, I liked that match a lot. It's just an interesting scenario in DDT with the crowd, and it didn't go that long, but for what they did, I think I agree with you that it was probably the best worked match of the four. Endo and Tanaka I thought was fine. Like a solid match, but Endo again, I don't really love him selling a lot of these technical moves as much. But Tanaka did some interesting. I loved the segment where they had this back and forth where Tanaka like worked really high speed that led to a standing moonsault. I thought was really good. They had there and Tanaka, despite his old age, this guy's ageless. Like, he has the fountain of youth
yes.
right now. So I really enjoyed that. It was a good match. Again, Endo, I'm not in love with all of his stuff, but he does a lot right, too. So that was fine. The main event, I think, was good, but again, not as good as Hiroshima versus Higuchi, even though I like the finish, and I like the booking of Higuchi moving forward. I agree with you. Of the four semifinalists we have here, with Higuchi, Endo, Akito, and T-Hawk, I would like the final to be T-Hawk and Higuchi. And T-Hawk to beat Endo. Yeah, I want T-Hawk to beat Endo to go to the finals. So you could have Higuchi getting a title shot, but also T-Hawk getting a title shot as well into the finals. But who knows? All four of them are deserving in their own ways, I feel like. You know, Endo's the champion, so he doesn't need it. But the other three all deserve it in their own ways. And I think Higuchi would have to be the favorite because he is the youngest and the DDT Trueborn. So I think he's the one that should win, ultimately. I agree with you.
Yes. So, that's as far as we can go with DDT. A couple of really great matches, and I really love how far they go with Higuchi. So, we'll see where that leads us. And from DDT, Dylan, where do you want to go first? All Japan or Noah?
Let's see. Let's go ahead and go to Noah because I think there's a lot more to say about the main event. They had a bigger show recently, so let's just give them the rub first.
Yeah, they had this bigger show. I actually went back and watched a couple of their shows from July and early August. I also watched the Departure shows, and my opinion of the Goshi Ozaki versus Naoichi Marufuji match is that it was one of the best matches of the year. I absolutely loved what they did in these 30 minutes that they did. And the first thing that I wanted to ask you about Noah in general is, what's your opinion of the Goshi Ozaki title reign as it stands right now? Especially considering that you wanted Kaito Kiyomiya to remain champion in January when Ishii Ozaki defeated him.
Oh, I think Kaito winning the title would be much better, but considering we wouldn't have seen what we saw on the last show. We can only hope that person would not be champion right now. If we could avoid that match, I would 100% go back and beat Kaito. You can't really judge Go's title reign fairly, to be honest, because of the pandemic and stuff, but I don't know. I didn't love that match as much as you did. Marufuji, to me, not really because of Go, but more Marufuji. I think, you know, there's something that didn't click with me. It was a fine match. I think I liked it better than the Nakajima and Keno match, actually. I mentioned this on the Patreon. But still, they didn't blow me away, I think, as much as with you. It was a fine match. None of his matches, honestly, have blown me away. To me, the Saito match might be my favorite one
that
he's
great.
Had so far. Yeah, the Saito match was a great match. But we'll talk about it some more. I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. But to me, these two matches he had were not a match of the year quality, in my opinion. But I know a lot of people think that, though. Like, that a lot of people agree with you, ultimately. So you have to consider it a success, considering the circumstances. I just don't think you can really judge it accurately. I don't think it matters who the champion was in this year,
yeah,
more or less.
True.
But he's done fine. Like, his work has been good. I really enjoyed him in that Marufuji match, even though I didn't love it. I thought he did a fine job. And I've always said this, he is a great worker who's been snake-bitten in all of his title reigns, including this one. So I honestly kind of root for him.
That's exactly why I'm asking, because
yeah.
In this title reign, I feel that Shiozaki has gotten much more comfortable with this role that he is supposed to play in Noah as the ace. He has this catchphrase of, I am Noah now.
Yep, that's true.
And I really think that he's come around to really be what they want him to be, what they see in him, in contrast to what he did earlier in his early runs in Noah and also as a Triple Crown champion in All Japan. He always seemed that it all seemed that he was just, quote unquote, just a wrestler. But now, to me, it feels like that he learned how to carry himself as the ace and the champion of this promotion.
He's doing a fine job, like I said, and I think I agree with you, actually, that he has grown into a role more now, because mm-hmm. like you said before, he was just a wrestler. Now he has a whole new gimmick of, I'm the Heart of Noah, pretty much. I was here when all the big stars were here, and I could carry the company into the next boom period, pretty much. Like, that's more or less his story, is that he was there when Noah was still at its peak, and he could bring it back, like, pretty much. And that may or may not be true, but still, for a gimmick, I think that's very good, and one for him to hang on to is much better than just him being, hey, Go Shiozaki, the ace. he had great matches, especially, when he was in All Japan. That run is lost to time in a lot of ways. Hopefully they're starting to import more stuff onto the All Japan side around that era, but if they get to his run in All Japan, if they ever put that up, or it goes online again, I would really recommend people watching that run, because he was a great champion for All Japan. Even against someone like Akebono, he had a great match against. Joe Doering, he had an amazing match against.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And when he first came in, he had an amazing match versus Kai in the Champion Carnival 2013. Akiyama and Go had great matches. It's like, whoever he was against, there were some great matches, pretty much. So to me, Go has always been a tremendous worker. The charisma and the presence just hasn't been there. But I think, like you said, he's getting there. It's just impossible to tell in this title reign. And I would love to see – I think that they should now – I mean, like I said, I still think that Kaito would have been better as champion. But now that they've done it, I think that they should keep him as champion until the fans are back to see what they have in him.
I absolutely agree with that. You have to see how – fans fully react to Shiozaki. I think that is a point that you can't fully evaluate the title reign that he had unless you can see a full crowd reaction to him.
Mm-hmm. Man, those shows too, those departure shows, those crowds to me, especially the first night, I thought that crowd was terrible. And it took the show down in terms of just reactions.
Even... I mean, they can't really react. They are told to not react fully. But the crowds in New Japan have been so much better in just finding a way to clap along with the wrestlers doing their usual stuff than the crowds in Noah. It just feels like they are sitting on their hands.
Yeah, that exactly. Like, it's just, and a lot of these main events are kind of
long.
Yeah, drawn out as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the Kenno and Nakajima match, and I've seen it on your Twitter that you're probably always the low man on these Kenno and Nakajima matches, and I thought it was a good match. But as you said, they are always so drawn out, and sometimes it's just hard for me to understand why these two strikers are going through a 25-minute match when in the end the result is a KO after a high kick.
I just think they bring out the worst in each other, like, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of times before, like, their matches weren't that long before, years prior, but I still didn't like them that much as other people. I just think that these guys, for whatever reason, like, Nakajima, incredibly charismatic performer, great overall wrestler. I had him as, a best in-ring performer for first half of 2020 in our half-year awards. He was right up there. But to me, it's like these guys, when they wrestle each other, they just become stoic guys who kick hard. And that's all there is to it. Like to me, there's just not a lot of depth to these matches.
Kick hard. And actually, there is something to it. And people really like this approach of wrestling because, I mean, these hard kicks, they sound like gunshots, and it's just so impressive to see these guys kick each other so hard. But it always feels like that nothing comes of it. They just stand there and kick each other hard and look at each other and they try to look mean. There is no sense of one guy being hurt from these kicks, and they actually should be hurt.
And the problem is we've seen these guys do much better against other people. Like, look at Nakajima versus Hideki, or Kenno versus Kaito. Yeah, or Sugiura, another great talent. You know, like, or Kenno versus Kaito, or Kenno versus Sugiura. Like, we've seen other matches where these guys have stood, you know, done their style, but done it much more effectively and had much more to their matches than just what they do against each other. So I don't like them as opponents. I know, and like I said, it's cool to watch in some ways, but I think they could be so much better, in my opinion. And like you said, it was a fine match. It was not a bad match or anything like that. I'm not going to say this was the worst main event ever or anything like that. Well, we have a match that we could talk about that in a minute, in terms of worst semi-main event anyway. But like, I just think that they could be a lot better. So it's disappointing that these two great performers just kind of fall back into their comfort zone against each other when we've seen them do so much more against other people.
That is true. And
or Kenno versus Go in their remember when Kenno won the tournament?
Yes, the Global League back then.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an amazing match. But you know,
yeah, because Shiozaki is so great in selling for a guy like Kenno.
You could say that for all those names we just mentioned. Like, they were able to bring something different and unique to the table to counter their styles. And like you said, most of them were very good at selling their offense and putting them over as well.
Yeah, yeah. So for the show that they did on August 10.
Yeah. Goodbye, Yokohama Bunka.
Goodbye, Yokohama Bunka. Big Japan is still doing two shows there at the end of the month. Ice Ribbon ran it one final time.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's it for Yokohama Bunka. A arena that in recent years has kind of become the Kirken Hall outside of Tokyo for a lot of companies. I mean, Wrestle One ran there. All Japan ran there. Basically, all companies ran there. Yeah, Noah ran there one final time, and I came off watching the Shiozaki versus Maro Fuji match, as I said, and I really loved the match. And I've read about the Shiozaki versus Kenno match. First, what were they thinking to put this match on in the main event of the final Yokohama show with a build of 5 days?
So, like, that was so stupid, in my opinion. I don't understand at all why did it have to be this way? Why couldn't they have set this up last month and at least have a full month's build to it?
I think they booked themselves into a corner. They booked themselves into a corner with having to do their anniversary shows around the 4th and 5th of August, and then they booked Yokohama 5 days after that. And so they had to come up with something to have big main events for that. And that's what they came up with.
Well, I still think that they could have booked the title matches last month and just had a Noah anniversary match. Much like last year with Kotaro and Maro Fuji, a unique match.
Absolutely.
They could have done something like that. Have the junior champion face the heavyweight champion to main event the shows. And it could be anything. Like, you know, you could do a million different things. You didn't have to have the title matches.
I felt like they could have just put the six-man tag match that was beneath the national title on the 4th in the main event.
That would have been perfectly fine. Like, it's a Sugiura-gun versus, Kongo match. You could have had a Noah team face them instead of Kongo if you wanted. You know, it could have been fine. Like, you know, any option would have been much better. Or main event with a junior title match if they wanted. And, like, the crowd wasn't that good. They didn't announce the numbers, so it wouldn't have had that much of an effect, no matter what they put on there.
To the numbers thing that you brought up, I'm not sure if they don't bring it up because the crowds are poor, or if they don't want unnecessary attention on them for having too many people in an inside venue during times where the coronavirus spreads a lot in Japan.
You might be right on that. That's actually an interesting theory you could have there. I don't know. To me, the crowd was dead on those anniversary shows.
Yes,
so it might as well have been nobody there. To me, again, I don't know, man. I wasn't a huge fan of all of that. But regardless, the point remains, they didn't have to do the title matches. They could have built it up a lot better for this last Yokohama show. And that's a big show. That's worthy of a title match. I just, like you said, 5 days, and the fact that it's a double title right after New Japan did their thing. It was always going to be a bad look, even though they decided to go a different route, thankfully. But there was just, what they did was the best option, of any of the options. Like, if anybody had won, it would have been stupid. Like, if either man had won, I feel like.
But even going to the point of doing a double title match, I mean...
And it was still bad because of how it looked. Exactly.
Yeah. Why do they always feel like they have to copy New Japan in all their aspects?
I don't know, man. Like I said. And the thing is, they do some things better than New Japan, but then they decide to go this route. Mm-hmm. To me, the national title is much, much better than the Intercontinental title in New Japan in terms of how it's been booked.
Yes.
It actually matters, which is much better than the Intercontinental title. You know, you've had great title reigns with Nakajima, Sugira, guys like that, who can, now Kenno getting the win, a fine title, like, you know, a very good undercard title, or, you know, main event level title, actually, even. So now you do this. Not even a year old title, this national title, and you go to the double title match for no reason other than we just saw it in New Japan. It really makes no sense to me. I don't know why they do it in one victory instead of G1 Climax. Why? There's no reason for it. The Global League was fine. They didn't have to change it. So I don't really understand what their deal is, but... I didn't like that part at all. The double titles right after the New Japan. I didn't like it because of the 5-day build-up. That was even worse, to be honest with you, than even the copying New Japan, because that was just stupid, like the 5-day build-up. But the double titles, I didn't like it either. I totally agree with you.
On the topic of copying New Japan...
Yeah.
60-minute time limit draw. Of course, they had to do it in Yokohama Bunka, going back to 8-8-88... when Tatsumi Fujinami and Antonio Inoki had a 60-minute time limit draw in the main event here in Yokohama. I saw this. We have a rating of 9.09 on Cage Match for this match. What's your opinion on this?
I mean, I didn't like it as much as them. Obviously, the you know, 9 out of 10 to me is match of the year level, and I don't think this hit that. You know, Also, I think it's worth noting, before we even get into this match, this is something that I almost want to rewatch again, and because I can admit this, that my opinion may not be fair on it. And it was a good match. It was not a bad match at all. I'm not saying that. But to me, I didn't think this was a great, great match or anything like that. I thought it was a good main event that went 60 minutes. But a big issue with this is that it came off of, to me, one of my least favorite matches of the year that also went 30 minutes. Right before it. So that may have colored it. I think if you watch it on your own or on its own, you might have a different opinion of it. So I want to point that out right away. I was in such a bad mood after the semi-main event that I think it may have colored my opinion of this match too much. But they wrestled good. But to me, compare that to the Global League final they had that I mentioned earlier, that match was a lot better than this, I think, even objectively.
I mean, I liked the match, and it was a 60-minute match, and I knew I was going into a 60-minute match. I didn't watch it live. I just watched it a couple of hours before we started recording, actually. And to me, it never dragged. And that is one very positive note for a 60-minute match, that it didn't drag. And I also very much liked the approach that they took in the match, and also I liked how they went back to matches that both guys had to... this match prior to this match. For example, Goshi Ozaki still having his taped up shoulder. And in the match, Shiozaki got his leg worked over and he got kicked a lot by Kenno. Kenno went for the ankle hold later on. And another great callback, this time not to New Japan, but to Noah, was that Kenno went to Dragon Suplex Goshi Ozaki off the ramp, which immediately brought flashbacks to Misawa versus Kobashi back to me.
So that was great.
That was great. And he went to brainbuster him off the apron later. So the exhaustion after like 40 minutes really hit hard. And I liked how they built to that earlier in the match and to the late stages of the match. One thing I absolutely did not like, and that, again, goes back to a prior match that Kenno had. Mm-hmm. Because, as I mentioned, in this national title match, Kenno defeated Nakajima with a high kick by KO. And around the, I don't know, 30, 40-minute mark, I'm not entirely sure when it was, Kenno hit Shiozaki with a bunch of head kicks. And Shiozaki went down, but there was no KO in comparison to the national title match. I don't think that that was a good look for the heavyweight title match, that the finish of the national title was just used as a somewhat of a transitional phase in the match.
Yeah, it looks worse for the national title.
Exactly.
If anything, to me. Yeah. Like, yeah, that wasn't my favorite spot either. I think the biggest problem was, it really, to me, again, this is why I think I don't want anybody to hold me to this opinion. I'm going to give this another shot at the end of the month. I can't do it right now because there's so much stuff to watch. But at the end of the month for Match of the Month, I'm going to rewatch this whole ordeal and just watch it on its own. So I don't want anybody to hold it to me or hold me to it. I think the first, probably, I won't say the first half of the match, but the first 20 minutes or so, I thought they really didn't add a lot to the match. Like, they weren't bad or anything, but I didn't think that it was very exciting. Like, they didn't pick up the pace until around the halfway point, which to me is much like a New Japan match in a lot of ways.
Yes, I thought about that too. But then, Dylan, for example, for an Okada match, you know, for example, when he faced Kenny Omega, after the first 10 to 15 minutes, you could tell that they would be going long. But the Noah main event style is laid out that most of the matches just look like that.
Yeah.
You have a very methodical approach to that. And unlike in a 40-minute Okada match, you can go back to the first 10 minutes and point to things that they do that will still be picked up after that.
Well, this is absolutely better than those style matches,
exactly,
in my opinion.
Exactly.
Like, I've always said that.
And the Noah style totally benefits these long matches because it doesn't feel like they only are stalling for time. It feels like a different approach to wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's why these 60 minutes work.
I agree with you. Like, I totally agree with you. I've always felt that way about Noah, because a lot of guys in the past, especially like, you know, a year or two ago, that was a big talking point. The Noah main events always go 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But to me, I never bought into that, like, because I think the style is much better than the New Japan style when it comes to that style of match. So I've always felt that way, and I agree with you again on this one. I just felt like this one, I think because of the circumstances, because I really felt like that neither man was going to win this match. I thought for sure we were going to get a draw. Mm. That I think they did telegraph it a little bit, to be honest with you, like in the first 20 minutes. But maybe that's my own, like, I knew it was coming automatically. And not that, I mean, I didn't know the result when I watched this, but I knew that they were probably going to go to a draw. Like, I really thought it was unlikely for a title change here. Maybe I was reading too much into it on my own, but I thought this was like a 7 out of 10 match. Like, that was my thought afterwards. It was a good match.
I would go
but not great.
I would go higher than that, but I would be on the middle ground between you and the Cage Match users. I would go to an 8.
That's fair. And I'm going to give this another chance, because like I said, I was in such a down mood like after the semi-main event. That was such a match. So my opinion was kind of like how, remember we talked about on the Naito and Okada match? They had that terrible Jay White and Ibushi match before, and I think that kind of drug me down a little bit from it, because everyone else is like, the match of the year, and I'm like, oh, it was a really good match, but, you know, the moment was more important. But this one, I think the other match kind of took me down a little bit, and I think that kind of played into it. So I do not want anyone mad at me. I'm going to give it a shot. You can be mad at me at the end of the month when I watch it again, and I will give an definitive opinion on it. But right now, 7 out of 10, good match. And for a 60-minute match, that's really good. But it didn't hit that big level that I think it could have.
What do you think about the finish? The finishing moment in the match, I mean, Go Shiozaki went for the moonsault, hit Kenno with a moonsault, kind of landed on Kenno's side. The reason for that was that Kenno rolled out underneath Shiozaki, so Shiozaki couldn't get to a pinfall, and right after that, the match ended.
Yeah, like I said, I like that they built it around a certain move, which was Go's moonsault. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that Go did a great job was when he did a great job. I mentioned earlier Takeshita wrestling a lower-ranked guy. Another good trope to have as a champion is the ace who is kind of like breaking down. He's had a long title reign. a lot of matches. Even the match versus Fujita was like 57 minutes or something. Although 30 minutes of it was standing around doing nothing. But still, like for the kayfabe story, it's like he's been through a lot. He's had injuries throughout his title reign. The coronavirus, you could even say, the circumstances surrounding the whole company might have been taking a toll on him. And that probably is a real-life deal. So, like, you know, you have a lot of storylines to build into this, and I think he portrayed that role very well, of a champion who's just fighting. Like, you know, he's running out of gas, he's breaking down, but he's still the man, by God. Like, kind of like, and you've seen this from Tanahashi, too, another comparison in the past, where he's like, this guy's super injured, he's broken down, but man, he's gonna fight, and he's gonna freaking show you he's the ace anyway. So, and I think Go did a great job of that in this match as well. So the finishing stretch was fine. I thought that, you know, I like that they built it around the moonsault, but it wasn't anything super standout or something that I want to remember for years to come or anything like that.
It's something that I feel they can go back to when they do another Kenno and Shiozaki match with a better build than this one.
I agree. I think that is the one positive to this match and all of it, is that they could set up another match down the line, like a rubber match, so to speak, between the two.
Yes, absolutely. Dylan, let's get to it.
No.
Dylan, okay, now that Kaito Kiyomiya has Muto out of his system, he can fully concentrate on winning the N1 victory.
I don't know, man.
What a stupid storyline that is. Now that he has lost to this guy without real knees, with two artificial knee joints, by tap out, he can now win the biggest tournament of the company.
How could anyone defend this?
I have no idea. The match itself was bad. It was so bad. It was one of those matches where it is absolutely impossible to suspend your disbelief, because we have Kaito Kiyomiya, the former champion, the 24-year-old supernova, if they even call him that. The 25-year-old supernova, for a long time, the biggest rising star in the company, against the 57-year-old man with two artificial knee joints. And the story should be very easy. The 24-year-old just out-wrestles the 57-year-old by just, like, avoiding the 57-year-old because he's able to move faster and move quicker. But instead, the 24-year-old decides to grapple with the 57-year-old. And then basically gets trapped in the end after they went to this story of Kaito avoiding the dragon screw like four or five times and going to an arm hold. And the funny thing is that after Muto, as I said, two artificial knee joints, got his arm worked over for 20 minutes in the match, he should just have one extremity left in his one arm, in his one good arm, but he still is able to do everything. Shining Wizard, Figure 4 Leg Lock, Dragon Screw, you name it. He's able to do everything. And Kaito eventually has to tap out. Keiji Muto stands up, shakes Kaito's head as he is in the ring, on his back, and just walks out.
Let me try and start with some positives to all of this. I think Kaito, like, this match wasn't as terrible in execution as I thought it would be. And it was a bad match. Like, I'm not, make no bones about it. It was not a good match at all. I think Kaito busted his ass to make this work. He sold for that old bad, like, to make this work. And you said grappling. To me, what that really means is Muto would put on a submission and lay around. Like, there was no grappling with Muto. It was very lazy performance. And not even lazy, like, to be honest with you. It's just he's not capable of doing anything anymore that he could. You just said he did everything. Those three moves you listed were everything that he has. That is his arsenal, you just named. I like the story overall of the beginning, like, where he was getting ahead of him with the dragon screws. I thought that was good stuff. But in the end, I just don't think it was a good match. Like, who thought it was a good idea to have Muto go 27 minutes? I don't know. He's just not... To me, I was never that big of a huge fan of his anyway, to be honest with you. But still, we've seen it in the past, him have amazing matches in his prime, even in All Japan when he went there. But 57-year-old Muto, there's just no way that was going to work. He's too limited. And Kaito did everything he could to make this work. But what was his reward for it? But losing to Muto, like you said, getting trapped and tapping out to Keiji Muto. I just, there was no way I was going to like this. It could have been one of the greatest matches of all time. And I still wouldn't have liked it for Muto going over just from a business perspective. Because I think it really does, it makes your champion, or not your champion, but your ace, look so, such a, he looked like such a geek, man. Like, you know, can you imagine if in 2013, Okada had lost to Tatsumi Fujinami in a singles match?
That's, yeah, I mean, you can even go to a match that really happened. You can go to Katsushika Okada versus Genichiro Tenryu.
And Okada won that match.
Yes! And so should have Kaido.
Exactly, you know, and Tenryu brought a lot more to that match than Muto did in this match. I will say that for sure. So, you know, I would have cheered for that if that had happened, probably. But and also that was on Tenryu's show. This was a Noah show. Like, why did it have to come to this? Why did it have to be this way? What is the explanation? What did it add to Kaito? What did Kaito gain from this?
The question too that I have is, what did it add to this show? Why did they need a Keiji Muto singles match on this show?
Well, like you said, the last show in Yokohama, they probably wanted to stack the card a little bit. You had a title match, a junior title match on the undercard. You had this match, so you could say in a weird way, even though I'm not buying it for two of the matches, but a triple main event along with some, you know, trios matches. I don't know, man. Like to me, Muto, we've talked about this before. I don't think Muto adds a lot to Noah. He's not a Noah legend, you know. He's a New Japan legend. He doesn't have that affinity with the Noah fans, so I don't really see what he gets. Even in All Japan, if Muto came to All Japan, I think that would make a lot more sense if he had an All Japan run and something. But even then, can you imagine him beating Kento in a match?
No, they wouldn't do that.
Well, Izanagi beat him.
Well...
I'm just pointing that out right now. So some questionable booking from many companies, but to me,
yeah,
Izanagi is a million times better of a wrestler than Muto is right now in 2020. So to me, I have much less of an issue than that in a tag match than this. Muto, man, I don't see it with him, and the match just wasn't good. There's no way around it. I think if you could buy into Muto, I think it's possible. You could like this match in some form. If you can buy into old man Muto having this run, I think Kaito did enough to keep you invested. But just for me, just watching it as a match, this was a hard, hard pass.
Yeah. And as you said, what is going to come of this match? Keiji Muto? Is he going to challenge Goshi Ozaki now?
Well, new champion, if that happens. Probably. Muto's not doing the job, I feel like.
I mean, right. After Keiji Muto is now went over the biggest rising star in the company, is it really so crazy to believe that they would actually put the belt on him?
I don't think it's crazy at all. I think that's absolutely something that could happen. Hopefully, I think Go has enough cachet with Nosawa and company that won't happen. But if it did, I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
I don't think it would happen, but I don't think you could say it's a shocking move if something like that were to happen and there was a title match.
Crazy, right?
Just crazy. And nothing show otherwise, by the way.
Yeah, let's quickly go down here. Sugiura-gun, Kazushi Sakuraba, Kendo Kashin, and Takashi Sugiura defeated Kongo, Manabu Soya, Masaki Tamiya, and Yoshiki Inamura. And I have to say, Dylan, I don't know if you saw the show, the Kongo Produce from July 24.
Yeah, I saw it.
I absolutely loved the Manabu Soya and Shuhei Taniguchi match.
Me too. Soya's good.
Yeah.
Man,
like, remember the draft that we did, the Wrestle One draft, where I said I don't want him in All Japan because in Wrestle One he sucked. He didn't have any motivation anymore, it seems.
No motivation.
And
exactly.
Now, ever since he's in Noah, this guy is a completely different person than from the guy he was in Wrestle One. And, I mean, good for him and great for Noah.
And like I said, I kind of alluded to that in the draft. I took him at the very end because I agreed with you. His Wrestle 1 sucked. But I felt like because in All Japan, if you remember a long time ago, he had a lot of upside of talent to him. And I wanted to see him, see if he would tap into that outside of Wrestle 1. And that's exactly what he's done. Now he's back to how he should have been all along. Just Wrestle 1 was such a, like, nothing company to a lot of people, it feels like, that a lot of these veteran guys especially, that he just never put in the max effort that he should have. And Taniguchi, another guy with a career revival in the last couple of years, I thought that was a great match. And that went 26 minutes. No problem with that. Even that whole show, Kenno and Hao, that was another good match. I thought the main event there, Mochizuki and Inamura, that was a great
show.
Like, Mochizuki Inamura, Taniguchi Soya, Kaz Hayashi and Neo, Masaki Tamiya and Daiki Inaba. Inaba, I've really liked in his run in Noah as well, by the way. And Kenno and Hao, all good matches, and I really enjoyed the Soya and Taniguchi as well as Kenno versus Hao. So those were both very good matches.
Totally. On this card, then, we had...
Oh, also, let me just say, there's one thing we're thinking about Soya. He had a great run on the Departure show, too, in the multi-man tag, where they had Sugira Goon. Him and Hideki had a great stand.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah. True. That's a match I want to see. Like, Soya and Hideki, give me that singles match all day, even though Hideki did say that they were Genome in the post-match interview afterwards. So, that's cause enough for firing, in my opinion. But still, not in Nosawa's world. But and if they wrestle, though, that's going to be a great match.
Hayata defeated Daisuke Harada for the IBW UK Junior Heavyweight title and threw it in the trash after the match, which got a great reaction from BritRest Twitter. There was the funniest thing about that, actually. I think that they just wanted to get rid of this championship because there is no use for it in Noah. But in doing so, they popped an entire scene. That is funny.
Hey, and I'm not even in BritRes, but I still pop for this. So I appreciate this as well. Put that piece of crap in the trash where it belongs. And, you know, it ain't worth the food stamp, Striga.
Yeah.
Like this title. I don't want to see it anymore. Nobody wants it. It sucks. And the match was not very good, ultimately, because Hayata was in it. But still, it was a fine performance. I turned the corner on him when he threw the title in the trash. But hopefully he doesn't go for any Noah championships anytime soon, would be my opinion on that.
Match was fine.
It was okay. Like, it was a completely fine match, but not special at all. Kind of boring, actually. I thought Harada seemed so unmotivated for this match, I feel like. I've really seen him in so many better matches. Mm-hmm. Even last month, you know, you could see matches. Hayata's been in some okay matches with O'Hara, but this just didn't do it for me. I also think, again, the crowd wasn't that great for the show until maybe the end. They kind of stepped up a little bit, but like you said, they can't really react with everything going on right now. I just thought it was a dead crowd, and I didn't think it was a great match at all, or a very good match at all.
The M stable of Masaki Mochizuki, Naomichi Marufuji, and Yuku Miyamoto defeated a trio I would call the Almost M's. Katsuhiko Nakajima, just close, very close. Mohamed Yone, we have the first name with an M. And Shuhei Taniguchi, who used to be Maybach Taniguchi, of course. So, these three, they could have been in a stable with Keiji Muto.
And what an honor that would have been. This M alliance is so goofy. Like, this is the kind of comedy that I enjoy. Like, I'm into this. Like, as stupid as it is,
you know,
I'm totally into this.
What I also enjoyed was when they hit this 12-man tag on the Departure show with the Sugiura-gun, and they all had their Sugiura-gun shirt, just Kendo Kashin. He wore a Noah shirt. That was so great, too.
Yeah, I'm into Sugiura Goon as well, but also the M Alliance. I love this faction, and even with Muto in it, I very much enjoy the stable, and I cannot wait to see who the mystery M will be coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. Who is it going to be? I don't know.
Well, originally they said it's not just them, but anybody with an M surname is in. You don't even have to be a wrestler, but you are in the faction if you have a last name that is an M. That's another thing. People keep suggesting people with M first names. It's last names only.
Last names, yes.
It will not be Masato Tanaka. Like I said, it will be an M last name.
Hmm. We'll see about that.
They could Well, I mean, I guess they could change it, like, if they want. You know, it is wrestling after all. But they specifically said surnames only. Mm-hmm. So if they go against it and bring in a new guy with a first name, I'm not going to be happy with that.
No.
I'm the gatekeeper for the M Alliance, by God. I decide.
Talking about goofy comedy, Dylan.
Yeah, Full Throttle.
Full Throttle. I absolutely love that they do the vroom vroom when they go to the ring. It's just fantastic.
Yes. I love
absolutely
it.
Absolutely fantastic. Well,
the three most unlikely bikers of all time as well.
I mean, can you imagine Hajime Ohara in this, I mean, in the Bandidos or something?
Yeah, yes, this biker gang has taken over. The most unintimidating one ever. Yoshioka, Kotage, and Ohara.
Seki Yoshioka in the chapter of the Hell's Angels.
Yeah, he's in the emo chapter of the Hell's Angels.
Love it.
Yeah.
One more.
You know I love it. Yeah, yes, I love all of them. And I like Stinger too, and Okada has impressed. That was a fine match, but definitely the main event for me was definitely the gimmick of Full Throttle.
One more storyline development in the first match. Tadasuke turned on Yohei. Lariated the shit out of him. That has gotten a pop out of you, I guess.
Yes, a legendary moment.
And I just hope that we can now go to a full Tadasuke push with a new look, new hair, and maybe going to the heavyweights.
Yeah, he would definitely fit in as a heavyweight. He's got the size. New hair, absolutely. That is a must for right now. But yeah, the turn on Yohei, very fun. You know, it's always good to see Yohei getting beat up by people. You know, Yohei in the Eastern Lariat Wrestling Universe, the GHC Heavyweight Champion, he just won the title, which is a nightmare version of real life. hopefully, I
feel like the game is ribbing you.
Yes, Fire Pro Wrestling World has just trolled me. In the very first episode of ELW, Yohei wins the title at NOAH. So
just,
I have
just
to.
Just fantastic. I love
and
it.
And we have a good relationship. We've gone back and forth, but now I'm declaring a promotional war on NOAH for ELW after putting the title on Yohei. I cannot allow it. That would be even worse than Muto winning the title, I think, potentially. Though at least Yohei... Can you... I don't even want to get into that discussion because that's two horrible options. But Yohei, he got turned on here, and it was all for the best. When will Harada turn on him next? That is what we need to see. Yohei needs to get beaten up by Harada now. We all need to step up. That's what I want to start. Forget the M Alliance, the Anti-Yohei Alliance. AYA, baby. Anyone who hates Yohei is welcome in my group now.
Oh, I love it. I mean, can you imagine Yohei going to the heavyweights? He could actually challenge soon to be GHC heavyweight champion Keiji Muto.
Oh my god. What is he, like 150 pounds?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Oh, 154 that would be... actually, yes.
Oh. Yeah, like one of the smallest guys on the roster. He's even smaller than Zack in New Japan.
Yeah.
So he could be the Zack Sabre of the NOAH roster. Jump up to the heavyweights despite being paper thin. And, you know, look, I mean, he's in good shape. He's just very skinny. Yeah. That's all, very small.
True. Yeah, so you said it. We had an undercard with some six-man tags here. Nothing that really stood out. I thought it was a pretty good show. Overall, just not overly exciting.
No, it wasn't a bad show. Just the semi-main really turned me off, but yeah. Everything else was fine, and the main event was a good match, and some people think it's a great match. So, you know, you won't hate yourself if you watch this. Nothing in the undercard was too long. It was all like 10 to 15 minutes, but skip the semi-main, and I think you'll like it. But the semi-main, I think also, it holds like... interest in a weird way. Like, what will this match be? Almost in a weird way. Not that it's going to be a great match, but will it keep you invested? I think that would be the test of that match.
Mm.
For me, the answer was a clear no. But maybe for you, it might be different. So I don't want to recommend it, but I'm just saying, if you did like it, I can't completely kill you. But for me, it really soured my night.
Another set of news is that the GHC Tag Team title has been declared vacant because René Dupri and El Hijo de Dr. Wagner Jr. can't come to Japan to defend the title. In hindsight, a pretty bad decision to strap two foreigners with the title in a situation of a global pandemic.
Well, when you say it like that, Striga.
I mean, it wasn't as bad in April when they won the championships, but in hindsight, yikes.
Not the greatest, to say the least. That probably could have been thought through a little bit more, but who would have guessed? But yeah. It was fun to have Rene Dupree as champion for a little bit. That's at least something you could look back at the record books and say, hey, you know, 3 years from now, we're going to be on the show, and I'm going to tell you, hey, Strig, you remember when Rene Dupree was champion? Was tag team champion in NOAH?
He will be back, he said. So
maybe he can go for the big title. Keiji Muto versus Rene Dupree.
Sure, why not? So, on the next big show they have, August 30, they will have the decision match for the tag team title. Axis, Goshi Ozaki and Katsuki Nakajima go against Takashi Sugiura and Kazushi Sakuraba. Can you imagine Sakuraba being a tag champion in 2020?
Can you imagine him in a tournament in 2020?
Yeah. We also have the debut of the new M. Maro Fuji, yes. Muto, Mochizuki, and M face Kenno, Masaki Tamiya, Manabu Soya, and Yoshiki Inamura.
Are they really calling him M? Like, instead of X, they're using M for it?
Let me look on the NOAH schedule, actually. Perloff has... My colleague on Perloff has said it as M. Let's see if the card on the NOAH page actually has it.
Please tell me they did.
They actually have.
Yes!
It's M instead of an X.
I love it. I freaking love this group. Like I said, my distaste for Muto singles matches aside, the M Alliance is the storyline of the year in wrestling anywhere.
But actually, Dylan, the greatest move was right there. They have the NOAH logo for the unknown M, and they didn't change the NOAH logo to MOA. They should have done it.
That has to be coming in the future. Like I want
MOA.
MOA is now a thing. The M's have taken over. I love it. I hope that happens. Like, you have no idea how much I want that to happen.
I love it. Oh, man. All right. Dylan, we've been kind of running long here, so I would suggest we do another show talking about the Champion Carnival and the N1 victory.
Yeah, we can do that.
Quickly just running through the lineups so you, the listener, have heard about the lineups of both tournaments. The N1 victory starting on September 18, going all the way to October 11, has two blocks. Block A is Goshi Ozaki, Masaki Tamiya, Manabu Soya, Kaito Kiyomiya, Masaki Mochizuki, and Kazushi Sakuraba. That's going to be a great match, by the way. Mochizuki and Sakuraba. Block B has Kenno, Naomichi Morofuji, Takashi Sugiura, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Shuhei Taniguchi, and Yoshiki Inamura. Whereas All Japan's Champion Carnival starts on September 11, runs until October 5, with two blocks of five. Block A, Suwama, Zeus, Jake Lee, Kumarashi, Jiro Ikemen, Kuroshio. Block B, Kento Miyahara, Shuji Ishikawa, Yuma Aoyagi, Shotaro Ashino, and Yoshitatsu.
Wonderful. Jiro lives his dream in the Champion Carnival, and Sakuraba no doubt lives his dream. And they had won as well. Should be good. Like I just to say one real quick, I think the less amount of people in the tournament is a positive. Like I don't think it's a negative. Yeah, I know that like the it was terrible circumstances that led to this, but I would much rather do this kind of tournament. We mentioned this last year with the N1. I think it's much better to do it this way. My ideal version would be a 20-man tournament with blocks. You know, like four blocks of five to keep things shorter. But to me, I like when you have a tournament that anybody can win, you know, pretty much. Like the more people that are eligible percentage-wise to win, I like. I don't want to see eight guys that are not going to win, that are not going to do anything of note. You know, we don't need Bad Luck Fale or, you know, all these guys, mid-card guys in the tournament. You know, what would the Champion Carnival benefit from having, you know, Ryoji Sai in it?
Yeah.
You know, so that's really my feeling of it. I mean, there's a couple of guys I wish would get a spot, like, you know, but mainly the young guys. Like, that's the only thing that we lose, and they don't usually get in the tournaments anyway. You know, like, sometimes they leave them out. But in NOAH, you have Inamura, and he's the main guy you would want in the tournament. So they did a great job with their lineup. The Carnival, I think, they kind of lose something by not having Sugiura in there like they announced in April. But the tournament itself should be really good overall. So I'm very much looking forward to both of these things.
Yeah, we'll be going much more in depth with that on the next show that we'll do. But the final topic that I quickly wanted to talk about was the Atsushi Aoki Memorial Show AA Forever from August 15. And I recently came across the reason that they actually do that on August 15, because August 15 basically is the Buddhist day of remembering the dead. So very well chosen day for this show. And the show overall was fine, nothing that you really should be going out of the way to see. Just a cool little way to remember Atsushi Aoki. Probably the matches that stand out are the matches 4 and 7. 4 was Hikaru Sato and Takuya Wada against Kagetora and Gosamaru in a really cool tribute to Atsushi Aoki with four guys that have a lot of history with Atsushi Aoki. And the main event, Suwama, Shuji Ishikawa and Shigeyori Irie against Kento Miyahara, Jake Lee and Yuji Hayashi. 20 minutes. Again, a match that on paper sounded like a six-man tag match of the year. It was very good, but not crazy good. What I remember more of this show was the aftermath of the main event, where they remembered Atsushi Aoki, who of course was a big biker, and we know that he died on his motorcycle. And they really got me when they started playing the first minute or so of Hotel California. That was really chilling. And when they held up this big picture of his in the ring and everybody was there, it was just a great, great moment. And you just see how important Aoki was for All Japan.
Absolutely. Like that was really the only thing that mattered, was the Aoki tribute on the show. But it was actually a pretty good show, too. So really recommend watching the tribute. Just amazing stuff to see the emotion from all these guys. And just a terrible thing that happened last year. It's something that we'll never forget, and that they, obviously, his friends and family and all of his wrestling family as well will never forget as well. So I love that they did this show. The main event was very good. Like you said, it wasn't a match of the year, but the main story was the post-match. The tag match I thought was really good, actually, like the Sato and Wada and Gosamaru and Kagetora. I thought that was a great 11-minute match. I cannot wait to see Sato face Ashino in a singles match for All Japan. Like that is going to be an incredible performance to me. Like Sato continues to impress always. They also had a title change on the show with the All Asia titles. With Purple Haze becoming the champions, beating Yankee Tukenju. Good match, you know, not anything too crazy. But Zeus and Izanagi definitely have improved lately.
They did. Since Yeah,
because they cut off all the bullcrap and just let him wrestle.
Crazy, that works, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm actually a big fan of this team now that they're letting them just wrestle and not do the Voodoo Murders bullcrap. So I liked the match. It was another good match. Really, like I said, a very good show just looking at it, but the main thing was the tribute as well. So you got a good show and an amazing tribute at the end as well. So highly recommend the Aoki Memorial Show.
Absolutely. So for this show, that is basically it. So please check us out on our Patreon, patreon.com/easternlariat, and also check out our shirts that we have up there. Also check out Eastern Lariat Wrestling on Twitch. What was the address again?
Twitch. Yeah, it's twitch.tv/shadows. Yeah, Shadows Over Heaven. Exactly. is the name of one of my finishing moves, and I use it as my screen name on there. So, and is it not very mysterious as sounding as well? And the first name of the show, From Shadows, the first show was named that. What will I name the second show? Every week, I'm going to be doing a stream one day for Thursdays. It'll be for the career mode, for Fighting Road. And on Saturdays, it'll be the ELW Eastern Lariat Wrestling, where we have our factions feuding, Shadow Hearts and Seigo no Shogun, as well as Crescent Moon and Crush 2020. Well, what were your, just before we leave, because somebody asked me this on the stream, what was your deciding factor for your names of your groups? Did you have any thought?
For the first one, I wanted to have something along the lines of a warrior, and I went to think about shoguns, I went to think about the Japanese Middle Ages. I just wanted to have something along these lines, and I just thought that the last warrior, that just sounded so cool. Or the last shogun sounded so cool. And for Crush 2020, I just went with a legendary All Japan women's name and just rebranded it for 2020.
Yes, a lot of fun storylines going on that show, too. It was very well received, and hopefully everybody checks that out. Follow us on Twitter at Eastern Lariat. Give us some nice reviews on iTunes and all of that, all of the places you find podcasts, everywhere podcasts are heard. Check me out on Post Pro Res with W.H. Park and John Pollock for the month of August. And we'll see what else happens in the coming weeks, but I cannot wait to do another show with you, Striga, wherever and however that may come about.
Absolutely. So that has been the Eastern Lariat for this time. Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.